So we turn to the passage for this talk. Let us turn to Genesis chapter 34. Genesis chapter 34. Reading verse 1 to the end of the chapter, to verse 31. Genesis chapter 34, starting from verse 1. Now Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she had borne to Jacob, went out to see the daughters of the land. And when Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite, prince of the country, saw her, he took her and lay with her and violated her. His soul was strongly attracted to Dinah, the daughter of Jacob, and he loved the young woman and spoke kindly to the young woman. So Shechem spoke to his father Hamor, saying, "Get me this young woman as a wife." When Jacob heard that he had defiled Dinah, his daughter. Now his sons were with his livestock in the field, so Jacob held his peace until they came. Then Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out to Jacob to speak with him. And the sons of Jacob came in from the field when they heard it. And the men were grieved and very angry because he had done a disgraceful thing in Israel by lying with Jacob's daughter, a thing which ought not to be done. But Hamor spoke with them, saying, "The soul of my son Shechem longs for your daughter. Please give her to him as a wife, and make marriages with us. Give your daughters to us, and take our daughters to yourselves. So you shall dwell with us, and the land shall be before you. Dwell and trade in it, and acquire possessions for yourselves in it." Then Shechem said to her father and her brothers, "Let me find favor in your eyes, and whatever you say to me, I will give. Ask me ever so much dowry and gift, and I will give according to what you say to me. But give me the young woman as a wife." But the sons of Jacob answered Shechem and Hamor his father, and spoke deceitfully, because he had defiled Dinah their sister. And they said to them, "We cannot do this thing, to give our sister to one who is uncircumcised, for that would be a reproach to us. But on this condition we will consent to you, if you will become as we are. If every male of you is circumcised, then we will give our daughters to you, and we will take your daughters to us, and we will dwell with you, and we will become one people. But if you will not heed us and be circumcised, then we will take our daughter and be gone." And their words pleased Hamor and Shechem, Hamor's son. So the young man did not delay to do the thing, because he delighted in Jacob's daughter. He was more honorable than all the household of his father. And Hamor and Shechem, his son, came to the gate of their city and spoke with the men of their city, saying, "These men are at peace with us. Therefore let them dwell in the land and trade in it. For indeed the land is large enough for them. Let us take their daughters to us as wives, and let us give them our daughters. Only this condition will the men consent to dwell with us, to be one people, if every male among us is circumcised as they are circumcised. Will not their livestock, their property, and every animal of theirs be ours? Only let us consent to them, and they will dwell with us." And all who went out of the gate of his city heeded Hamor and Shechem, his son. Every male was circumcised, all who went out of the gate of his city. Now it came to pass on the third day, when they were in pain, that two of the sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, each took his sword and came boldly upon the city and killed all the males. Then they killed Hamor and Shechem his son with the edge of the sword, and took Dinah from Shechem's house and went out. The sons of Jacob came upon the slain and plundered the city, because their sister had been defiled. They took their sheep, their oxen, and their donkeys, what was in the city and what was in the field, and all their wealth, and all their little ones, and their wives. They took captive, and they plundered even all that was in the houses. Then Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, "You have troubled me by making me obnoxious among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites, and since I am few in number, they will gather themselves together against me and kill me. I shall be destroyed, my household and I." But they said, "Should he treat our sister like a harlot?" God. blood is thicker than water, we say. But this teaching clearly shows to us that our relationship of faith with the Lord should stand out clearly, different from even blood relations. Yes, blood is thicker than water when you compare human relationships. But when it comes to spiritual relationship, our walk with God is far more important than all these other relationships. And if you were to keep to this teaching, trials will come to you. Sorrow of various kinds will come to you. The longer you live walking with the Lord, the more likely you are to face trials and sorrows relating to faith. We are not talking about trials and sorrows that arise from our stupidity. Often, there are people who act unwisely. They caught troubles to themselves by their foolishness. Now, we are not talking about that, but we are talking more about our desire to obey the Lord, to follow Him, even though it's difficult, it's costly. But we prefer to do what is right. We want to follow the Lord. So because of keeping to our faith, keeping to the teaching of the Bible, upholding the truth, standing on principles taught in the Bible, we suffer. That is the type of suffering we are talking about, the sorrows and trials of faith. Any attempt to minimize or hide this teaching is actually dishonesty. Preachers who preach that when you're converted, all will be well, the Lord will take care of all your troubles, conveying the impression that no troubles would come to us, that is not true. Claiming that we will have health and wealth, that is not true. We must rather warn people who are coming to faith and who have already come to faith, that the Lord teaches that there will be no peace in the family. We have peace with God, but that results in our peace with family being affected, because there will be those who misunderstand us or those who hate us without a cause. And what more with people outside the family? So our greatest enemies might come from one within our own home. So be very careful that you understand this teaching. By teaching wrongly of health and wealth when you come to faith in Christ, actually causes harm to preach to those who are the hearers. And for Jacob, he had his fair share of troubles, both from without and from within, because of his faith. So in this talk, our aim is to show that faithfulness to God will be accompanied by sorrows and trials. If you are faithful to God, then sorrows and trials will come to you. We don't call sorrows and trials, but we are saying that faithfulness to God will be accompanied by sorrows and trials. So since this is the truth that we believe is clearly taught in the Bible, we ought to see this in the life of Jacob, and we interpret his trials and sorrows in the light of what we know to be the teaching of the Bible, namely, this is a man of faith. He was coming to faith because he was pursuing to know God. He faced with trials and sorrow. He did not give up until he came to faith. When he had faith in God who saves through the promised Savior who is coming, he also had trials and sorrow. But we know God's blessing would be with him at the same time. It does not mean that all trials and sorrows will go then replaced by blessing. It doesn't necessarily come chronologically. But often it is that as there are sorrows and trials, but God gives us inner joy, and there are times when God blesses us. And although trials and sorrows are to be expected, but nevertheless, we know that God wants to bless us even in this life. We know there is a judgment. God will judge those who do wrong. If the judgment does not occur now, it will definitely occur in the future. Don't wrongly think that judgment will all be pushed to the future. No, even in this life, judgment will occur, and then finally, the ultimate judgment. But just as there is judgment on the final day, and there's judgment now, so also there's blessing on the final day, there's also blessing now. So you must understand that the Christian life involves blessing now, and then on the final day there will be full blessing. So we want to first consider trials before Jacob's conversion. So this is the first section trials before conversion. Some of the trials that are obvious include the following. One was the rivalry between the two wives and dragging in the two mates, because each wife was given a mate to accompany her. So Jacob married Leah, and the father gave her a mate. Then Jacob married Rachel, and Rachel was given a mate. The maid functioned as a very close attendant, helping the wives of Jacob. But among the pagans at that time, there was the practice that if the wife could not give birth to a child, then the maid can sleep with the husband and produce children on behalf of the wife. So that was the practice. It was a pagan practice. But because Laban's family had been influenced by paganism to the extent of having actual household gods, and Rachel stole some of the household gods when they were running away. So Laban's family had been influenced by paganism to such an extent. Don't be surprised, therefore, to hear that they were practicing this pagan belief that if the wife could not bear children, then the maid accompanying her could sleep with the husband and produce children on her behalf. See? So we learned already that polygamy is evil and is never sanctioned in the Bible. God never approves of polygamy, having more than one wife at any one time. If your wife dies and then you marry another, that is not polygamy. You still have only one wife at any one time. But when you have more than one wives at any one time, that is polygamy instead of monogamy. So similarly, a woman should have one husband. A woman cannot have two or more husbands. So that would not be right. So the teaching of the Bible is that. So in the case of Abraham, David, Solomon, God tolerated the influence of paganism in their life, because God had a higher purpose to fulfill. God wanted to reveal deeper, greater truths. If God were to deal with every sin in Abraham's life, Abraham would long have been crushed. Similarly with us today, if God deals with every sin in our life, we would have been crushed. See, but God often overlooked the smaller sins because he wants to deal with us in the more important matters first. So I give you the illustration of the man who was a heavy smoker. And I knew that that was not the right place to begin. We don't say, no, you must stop smoking before you become a Christian. Then it will be salvation by works. He would think that by stopping smoking, it somehow contributed to his salvation. So because we are taught very clearly in the Bible that salvation is by grace through faith in Jesus Christ alone. So that was what I focus on. So in our witnessing to this family and to this man over the years, with time this person was converted. And then he raised the matter. Pastor, I have this big problem. I'm smoking so much. I want to break it. See? So at that time I told him, more important is you look for the Lord, seek him until you find him. And when you have peace with God through faith in Jesus Christ, he will give you the strength to break from this addiction. And in fact, he will transform you in other ways. And true enough, not long after his conversion, he struggled. And one day, when I asked him, he said, he has not been smoking for some time already. So I believe that he stopped smoking and he had not gone back to smoking until he passed away. He was called by the Lord in recent days. And I believe that he is a true child of God who had overcome the smoking problem. So you see now the importance. God overlooked even polygamy. He never approved of polygamy, but he overlooked them because they were in the midst of pagans, and that was the practice. And especially for Solomon, it was the practice of kings. The mightier you are, the more wives and concubines you had. So Solomon, along the way, compromised and was drawn away. And he suffered for it because his heart was turned away from God. But we do know that he repented, because in later days he wrote the book of Psalms, the book of Ecclesiastes, where he tells us all this danger of compromising and going away from God. And he tells us that everything's vain, vanity of vanities. You pursue the things of this world. In the end, it amounts to nothing. What is important is to know God. Then he wrote the book of Proverbs, and the Proverbs show to us the danger of being caught up in women, and instead of being faithful to the wife of your youth, you go and pursue other women. So Solomon, in latter days, wrote to warn younger people. So we know that Solomon is mentioned favorably in the New Testament. Although he was not a perfect man, nevertheless, he's mentioned as in some ways pointing us to Jesus Christ. And therefore, we conclude that a person like Solomon, Abraham, David, Solomon, although they have many wives, which was contrary to God's will, nevertheless, they were God's children, and God used them despite their sin. So despite our sins, God continues to use us, but that is no excuse for us to continue in sin. So if sin is exposed in our lives, we would want to deal with them, but often it is that God did not deal with us straight away, harshly, upon whatever sin that's found in us, we would have been crushed. So that's how we understand things. But as a result of Jacob ending up with two wives and having two mates whom he slept with, and therefore producing children from these four women, you discover that problems came. And the struggle over the two wives resulted in him having a tough time. And if you were to recall how they competed with one another to have children and also to have the husband, you really find that it must have been a big headache for Jacob. He must often have been exasperated and wonder what he could do about the situation. So we just look back and see what was happening at that time. And you look at the chapter 30. Leah has already been bearing children. And Leah was, as it were, gloating over Rachel. And so what happened is in chapter 30, verse 1, and when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister and said to Jacob, "Give me children or else I die." What would you do as a husband? Your wife come to you and complain like that. You see? And Jacob's anger was aroused against Rachel. Remember, she loved Rachel much more than she loved Leah, which was wrong, of course. Favoritism between for children, and now favoritism for wives. And then, you see, Jacob in anger said, "Am I in the place of God who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb?" So she said, "Here is my maid, Bilhah. Go in to her, and she will bear a child on my knees, that I also may have children by her." Okay? So this struggle went on. And then each time they named a child that's born, it is as though each is gloating at the other. Each is laughing at the other. Even the names that they give to their children. Look at verse 9. When Leah saw that she had stopped bearing, she took Zilpah, her maid, and gave her to Jacob as wife. And Leah's maid, Zilpah, bore Jacob a son. Then Leah said, "A troop comes." So she called his name Gad. Gad means a troop comes. Oh, why name your son like that? As though you are at war. No, a troop is coming now to fight with you. Well, you see the competition between the wives. Then Leah's maid, Zilpah, bore Jacob a second son. Then Leah said, "I'm happy, for the daughters will call me blessed." So she called his name Asher. She said, I'm so blessed. Then this went on. And one day what happened is the eldest son, verse 14, "Now Reuben went in the days of wheat harvest and found mandrakes in the field and brought them to his mother Leah. Then Rachel said to Leah, 'Please give me some of your son's mandrakes.'" Mandrakes is a type of fruit like tomatoes, but it's a wild type of tomato that's supposed to be to give sexual desires to the people, make a person more fertile sexually. So she wanted this. And in verse 15, but she said to her, "Is it a small matter that you have taken away my husband? Would you take away my son's mandrakes also?" So that's the way Leah spoke, you see. She was married first. So she looked upon the husband as her own. But when Rachel got married, Jacob loved Rachel more and seemed to spend more time with Rachel. And so Leah was unhappy and said, "You stole away my husband. Now you want my son's mandrakes as well." So Rachel was so desperate for the mandrakes. So she said that in reply, therefore he will lie with you. What do you say? Verse 15. But she said to her, is it a small matter that you have taken away my husband? Would you take away my son's mandrakes as well? And Rachel said, therefore he will lie with you tonight for your son's mandrakes. So I allow our husband to sleep with you tonight, but you give me the mandrakes. Yeah? So desperate for the mandrakes. Yeah? Then when Jacob came out of the field in the evening, Leah went to meet him and said, you must come in to me, for I am surely hired. I have surely hired you with my son's mandrakes. And he lay with her that night. So very sad. Two women who were supposed to be wives of the same man, they were fighting for the husband to such an extent. See? And this thing went on. Yeah, until the time came for them to leave Laban's household. So all in all, we see what a trying time it must have been. Then what about outside his immediate family? Remember, he was having struggle with Laban. Laban has been cheating him. How many times? Jacob said to his wife, this past 10 times he has cheated me. But 10 times must be looked upon as a round figure. There must have been many times, countless times. So as a round figure, in chapter 31, verse 6, he told his wife, and you know that with all my might I have served your father, yet your father has deceived me and changed my wages 10 times, but God did not allow him to hurt me. So Jacob struggled with the uncle as well, working for him, often has pleased him, and when a sheep or a goat was killed by a wild animal, he has to repay, you know. So perhaps he has to forgo, you know, today's meal. You know, say, don't slaughter this goat for my family. You know, we have today, just eat plain rice or plain bread, and then repay this which is supposed to be our food. So he has to repay to the uncle. So, and this Jacob suffered much. And what was happening to all these sufferings in the period when he was seeking to know God? God was using all these trials to smoothen this rough stone. Jacob is like a rough stone. And when a stone is rough, it cannot be used well. And this idea of a smooth stone, a stone being smooth, comes from the picture later on in David's life. You remember David, he was fighting Goliath. He put his hand into the pocket to take up a smooth stone and put in his catapult. And then swing, and swung, and let go the stone. And the stone went into the air and hit Goliath right in between the eyes. And it sank into the head of Goliath. And Goliath just fell dead with one blow. See? So one small smooth stone killed the giant. Now, if that stone had not been smooth, when swung, you see, the ragged edges of the stone would cause friction, and it wouldn't swing well in the air, and it wouldn't be able to hit straight. Therefore, you need to have a smooth stone. And that is a picture of our Christian life. When we are wild, when we are restless, when we want our own way, see, and that is like a character that is rough. See, when in us, our thinking is just full of self and full of this world and wanting our own ways. We're so used to wanting our own ways. Yeah? God cannot use us. And when we come to faith, God has to smoothen this stone. And the more we are smoothened, the more useful we become. And when we are not smoothened yet, although we have come to faith, we are very clumsy. We can't be effective in serving the Lord. And along the way, as we serve the Lord, we keep stumbling and causing hurt, causing harm, unnecessary harm here and there. See? So Jacob, as it were, was being transformed more and more. The rough parts were being knocked away. And it's painful to have the rough parts knocked away, but he was becoming smooth in order to be used by God. That is why we entitle the theme of this church camp as the taming of Jacob. Jacob was restless in his soul, wanting his own ways. His character was rough. So he is like a wild man inside his heart. Don't judge wrongly, thinking that he was a smooth-skinned man who liked to be at home, while Esau, his brother, was a rough-skinned man who liked to be in the wild. So you draw the wrong conclusion. Esau is a rough man. Jacob was a smooth man. But inside his heart, Jacob was rough compared to Esau, who was quite simple-minded. And of course, that is no excuse for being foolish. But along the way, he proved himself unworthy to be a recipient of the covenant blessing of God. Whereas Jacob was the one chosen by God to be used to pass on the covenant blessing. But before he could be used, he had to be smoothened. So we see trials even before his conversion throughout his seeking period. So God was using all these trials to bring about his character so that he will finally fit in. He will be used by God. So we conclude in this section that family trials and sorrows are the lot of true believers by comparison with the passage we've seen earlier in Matthew 10, verse 34 to verse 39. We know that when all who finally come to faith and who want to follow the Lord, they must expect trials and sorrows. So family trials and sorrows are the lot of all true believers. Then trials after meeting the Lord. The Dinah incident caused no small grief to Jacob. Jacob must have been terribly upset by the whole incident. Who would not be? He had so many sons. He later had other daughters. But Dinah is mentioned only because he features in this incident. We know that he had other daughters from other passages of the Bible. But what we want to take note of is only one is mentioned by name here. And the reason is to prepare us to know the incident that happened in chapter 34. What happened is that as Jacob and his family settled in Shechem, Shechem was within the boundary of Canaan. So Jacob thought at last he has fulfilled the will of God to come back to the land promised to Abraham and Isaac. So he was within the boundary of the promised land. But actually, God did not want him to stop there. He should have sought the will of God and continue. But he thought that he had fulfilled God's will. He settled down, bought land. And he, out of a good heart, named the place according to his name, new name of Israel. So he named that this is the place where God wanted him to settle. And what happened is that Dinah appeared to be too outgoing a young lady. She seemed to be mixing around and going out with the young ladies. We will take it that she didn't go out with the young man. But being too outgoing and going out with the young ladies who were from unbelieving families, it was quite unbecoming. And you imagine the local people will along the way whistle and have caught cat calls, say, and everybody would draw near to her. And she would be playing along, acting as though she's comfortable with the company, with the result that one day she was dragged away by some young man and she was raped. Verse 7, you can see that. And of course that upset the family. The brothers were all very angry because their sister has been violated by these foreigners. And of course you can imagine Jacob and his wives, they must have been very upset, and particularly Jacob, because he wanted to do God's will. He wanted to walk in accordance to God's way. Why is this trial coming to me, to the family? And he's the father of the household. He's ultimately in control. He's ultimately held responsible. So God, what is happening to me and my service to you? It is being as it were, smeared by this incident. It shouldn't have happened. And the brothers all knew that. In verse chapter 34, verse 7, the sons of Jacob came in from the field when they heard it, and the men were grieved and very angry because he had done a disgraceful thing in Israel by lying with Jacob's daughter, a thing which ought not to be done. Now, if they were angry as brothers, what do you think? How do you think Jacob felt? You see? And he must have many confusing thoughts. How now to handle the situation? What should be done? Revenge should be upon his heart. See, then what would be the best course of action? And here are my sons. They're all very angry. And how do I handle the situation? Wow, it's not easy to be a father at that time. Not easy at all. Not easy. Now, put yourself in this situation.
How would you have handled the situation? I want to tell you that if you really have a father's heart, you will be placed in an extremely difficult situation. So what happened is that the brothers have taken on some of the deceitfulness of the father, see? So they held their peace, see? And this Shechem, whose father Hamor was a prince of that region, that means he's a big man, he's the king, as it were, of that land, the kapala, the head man of that village, that town, you see. Then they are in the majority. Jacob and his family, although it's quite a big family with all the servants, nevertheless is a minority, and they are foreigners. They're settling then there. They have bought land from them. They're surrounded by all these pagan people, you see. And here is Hamor. His son really loved Diana. And so his son told the father, please go and get this woman for me as my wife. You see, I have come to know her, and along the way, this is what happened. See? So Hamor came to talk to Jacob. You see, my son really loved your daughter. You see? And Shechem seemed to have come along, and he said, whatever you ask, however much the dowry, whether it's one buffalo or five buffaloes, we are prepared to play. So we are using the illustration we are familiar with. Because one buffalo can cost a few thousand ringgit here. And so to have five buffaloes or ten buffaloes, they were prepared to pay. Because the son, is the man, young man Shechem, was the son of a chieftain, as a chief who must have resources and riches. See? And furthermore, he genuinely loved Diana so much. And that, of course, gave no excuse for him to violate Diana. See? And but he really, because he was really in love with Diana, he really wanted to marry her. So he was prepared to pay whatever the dowry. So the brothers of Diana acted sneaky. They held their peace. They controlled themselves, acted as though they were very meek and very afraid. It's okay. The Hamor was, and Shechem was saying to Jacob and his family, why don't we just marry one another's children, and then that way we become one? And if that were agreed on without any condition, what would happen would be that the smaller group will be swallowed up by the bigger group. They will be absorbed. They will become paganized. See? And although believers are a minority in this world, we are in the world, but we are not of the world. We must act as salt of the earth and light of the world. That's why we must remain separate from the world. Separate doesn't mean we physically separate ourselves and go and live in a monastery or in a Christian community. No. Rather, we must interact with the people of the world so that our influence, spiritual influence, is upon this earth. We must be salt that is scattered in the world. But at the same time, remember your identity in the world. You are not part of the world. Always come back to God's people. Always worship together. Always hear God's words being taught. That's why meeting together is so important. That's why when you come to church, you realize you are constantly hearing this. Don't just be believers in name and then come whenever you like. No! Put God first in your life. That means your work and your studies must come secondary. And of course, when you work, you have to work well to earn your living. When you are a student, that is your chief duty, because that is your work. You must do well in your studies. But don't go to the extent of your faith being affected. When your faith is affected, you are not doing working hard in your studies in a correct way. Really. You have to be spiritually healthy in order to do well in your studies. Don't you know that? So if you claim that you are working hard and therefore you can't go to church, something is very wrong with the way you study. Really, something is very wrong. You have not been guided right in your Christian life. Right? So we must understand. We must work hard, because as students, that is our chief duty. And if you are working in a profession, you must work hard and show a good example. Earn your pay. Don't just earn the pay, but you do minimum work. No. See? Show yourself as a true good Christian worker in a company. Be a good witness in the place of work, in the place of study. And that can happen only when you're spiritually healthy. So in your heart, if you put God first, you discover He will bless you in your place of work. He will bless you in the place of study. Really, prove God. Prove God in this. Put God first in your life. And there are those of us, we have failed in many ways. We are not perfect.
but we have seen God's hand in our lives. See? Really, we have seen God's hand in our lives. See? And I can testify that I'm such an unworthy creature. But in my student days, see, in the final exams, a bachelor degree final exams, tomorrow, Monday is my exams, but Sunday I want to go to church. I went to church as usual. I just dropped my studies. See? And of course, in between the morning service and the evening service, see? Then in between, in the rest time, see? Of course, in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, tomorrow is the exams. See? Tempted somewhat to open my books, but I refused. I refused. I wanted to honor God. See? And if you are not able to, you would think that you want to forgo church because tomorrow is a big exams. I will still not condemn you. I will understand. If you think you really need to study because you really feel that you will help you, go ahead. I understand because this is an exceptional situation. You're not doing it every week. But I'm saying that from my personal experience, God bless me because I desire to honor the Lord's Day. And I stopped studies on Sunday. Then the following day was the exams. See? And thank God I did reasonably well. But after the results came out, of course, the temptation is to think back. What if I have just revised on that Sunday instead of going to church? I might have done even better. But I always push that thought aside. See? That is temptation of the devil. See? Done is done. Past is past. I don't want to dwell on the past. I want to move forward. The Lord gave me that heart at that time, and He blessed me accordingly. See, test the Lord. See if He will bless you. Yeah? So you don't have to do exactly that same way. Remember, if you really feel that you need to stay back and revise, because tomorrow you have your big exams, we will understand, because God deals with us differently. But in your heart, you must honor God first. You must commit your studies to God. Yeah? And if tomorrow is your exams, you choose today not to go to church, you commit it to the Lord also. God, you say, I'm in such a state and I really need this time to study. Pray to God and ask Him to help you. Now, and overall, if you have a heart to want to put God first, I believe you will experience His blessing. Yeah? So what happened is that for Jacob, back to Jacob, you discover that it would not have been easy at that time. So what happened is this. Yeah? They put a condition to the people there. You know, if all your males circumcise like us, then we will freely intermarry and live with you. Yeah? But actually it was a trick. So they thought, that's not too difficult a condition to fulfill. All the males just get circumcised. Then we soon will have them as one of us. Because we are more, they are lesser. So their property will become ours. So we don't mind having more people as long as they are part of us. See? So that was what they did, and all the males got circumcised. But on the third day after the circumcision, when the infection has set in and they are in pain, you know, they are walking about with their sarong, perhaps, you know, holding their sarong, you know, because they don't want the raw flesh to be touched by the cloth. You see those people who are circumcised in the kampung, you see, they walk about like that. Huh? Or they put a stick or a piece of coconut husk, you see, put underneath the sarong to keep their sarong away from their circumcision, you see, so that they would not touch and be in pain. And that was the time when Simeon and Levi, these two brothers, born to the same mother as Dinah, these two brothers, see, they came and avenged their sister. These two came and slaughtered all the males in the community, killed them because they couldn't fight, they're in pain. So they were killed. And then they looted their things and took away. See? And when Jacob knew what had happened, Jacob was even more shocked. How could this thing happen? He said, this is not the best way to handle the matter. See? So do you not realize we are minority and we are foreigners in this land and you allow this to happen? Okay? And what happened is that the brothers protested. Yeah? In verse 31 of chapter 34, yeah? See, now Jacob really was distressed. Now, one problem already needed to be solved in the wisest and fairest way possible before he even could think of a solution.
a bigger problem arose. So how was he going to resolve this problem now? It's getting worse and more complicated. So you look at verse 30. Then Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, "You have troubled me by making me obnoxious among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites. And since I am few in number, they will gather themselves together against me and kill me, and I shall be destroyed, my household and I." So I am responsible for the whole household, but I am also responsible to God. God wants me to be the carrier, to be the agent of carrying the covenant blessing to the next generation. And I have to be responsible before God, and I have to be responsible to my family. You don't know what big trouble you have brought to me. Okay? And the brothers were so angry, what they could see was only vengeance. See? They said, "Should he treat our sister like a harlot?" Huh. They were young and full of feelings, but they didn't think far and the consequences. So what could this Jacob do? It was at this time that God's guidance came to him again. See? And in chapter 35, then God spoke to Jacob. So you can imagine Jacob must be calling out to God, "God, show me the way. What should I do now?" See? I feel very much violated. I feel so humiliated. And yet I have to be responsible for my family. And I want to walk carefully before you. I want to do the right thing. Show me the way. And here you see in verse 1 of chapter 35, God said to Jacob, "Arise, go up to Bethel and dwell there, and make an altar there to God, who appeared to you when you fled from the face of Esau, your brother." Guidance from God was now given to him, and he moved on to settle in Bethel. Now, it seems that God had not intended Jacob to settle in Shechem. He should have sought God's will in the first place. But now, the circumstances were such that God moved him, gave him the direction to move to Bethel, where God first met with him. Yeah? And that was what he did. He moved back to Bethel. Okay? And that was when the name of that place was finalized to be Bethel, because this was the land given by God to Abraham and his descendants. So Jacob can now name that place El Bethel, because there God met with him. Okay? So he called it God's house. El is God. Bethel is house. Okay? But the house of God. So God who meets with me at his house. Yeah? So that was what happened. Then another incident, namely deaths. A number of deaths brought grief to Jacob as well. There was Rachel. She died when giving birth. Chapter 35. Look at verse 16. They journeyed from Bethel, and when there was but a little distance to go to Ephrah, Rachel labored in childbirth, and she had a hard labor. Now it came to pass when she was in hard labor that the midwife said to her, "Do not fear, you will have this son also." And so it was, as her soul was departing, for she died, that she called his name Ben-Oni, but his father called him Benjamin. So Rachel died and was buried on the way to Ephrah, that is Bethlehem. Jacob set a pillar on her grave, which is the pillar of Rachel's grave to this day. Sad, isn't it? The wife whom she loved died. And then another incident in the family grieved him, that of Reuben. Look at chapter 35. See, we thought that losing Rachel was bad enough, but recorded very closely to this loss of Rachel was another incident that caused grief to Jacob. The fact that they were recorded so closely together shows to us that there must be a purpose why the writer writes like this. It is to show that Jacob's faith was put under trial. See? So in verse 21, then Israel journeyed and pitched his tent beyond the Tower of Eder. And it happened when Israel dwelt in that land that Reuben went and lay with Bilhah, his father's concubine, and Israel heard about it. What do you do with the elder son? He's big. Strong, he's young, whereas as a father you're old, but your son, your eldest son, whom you expect the most, he's the most responsible, he's going to inherit the property double in the family. See? So he violated your bed. Ah, he could do such a thing. You can't think how to handle such a situation. Aye, what do you do? What do you do? You want to fight your son? You want to really treat him like a small boy, ask him to kneel down, whip him? Would he obediently sit down and be whipped like that? And what does it accomplish? And the word will get out. A son going to defile the bed of the father. See? And later Reuben has to pay for it because he lost his birthright. In chapter 49, when he was being blessed, he was not blessed as the firstborn. Reuben, chapter 49, verse 3. Okay? And then after that was Isaac. Who was Isaac? Jacob's father, his old father. He lived up to 180 years old. Yeah? He died. And you look at chapter 35. And again, look, this chapter seems to be full of sorrows and trials. There must be a purpose why they are recorded together like this. Look at verse 27. Then Jacob came to his father Isaac at Mamre, or Kirjath Arba, that is Hebron, where Abraham and Isaac had dwelt. Now the days of Isaac were 180 years. So Isaac breathed his last and died and was gathered to his people, being old and full of days. And his sons Esau and Jacob buried him there. So the two brothers came together on a set occasion like this. And isn't it the case nowadays? We meet old friends during weddings and also during funerals. Our weddings are not too bad, are happy occasions, but often on set occasions, so it's a time of reunion with old friends. So let's meet more among God's children. People of the world, we may have good friends among them. We try to bring the gospel to them. But who are our true brethren, our own people? It's people in the church, people who share the same faith, people of the same church. So why don't we meet together more? Because the time of parting would come. One by one, we will be called home. See? And at that time, Jacob was already 120 years old. If you work things out, you will know that. His father was 180 years old. Jacob was 120 years old. Chapter 25, verse 26. And Jacob was going to live another 27 years, because he lived up to 147 years old. Okay? So, sad thing, isn't it? Still about 20 odd years more to go, but he faced so many trials. And as though that is the end, but not the end. His children have all grown up, see? And there was sibling rivalry, see? The children all did not like one particular son, Joseph. Why? Because Jacob did not learn from the mistakes of his parents. His mistakes showed favoritism and led to a lot of unhappiness and quarrels and even hatred among the brothers. Remember Jacob and Esau? The father loved Esau, the mother loved Jacob, with the result that there was unhappiness in the home. Yeah? But Jacob never learned from this. He should have rejected the bad examples of his parents and absorbed only the good examples. But he did not. So he behaved the way his parents behaved. Yeah? And this is where, when you are converted, you want to drop whatever unbiblical practice. I told you that, again, there's a place for personal testimony. God has been good to us. We are not perfect people. But I was from a pagan family, and I was raised in a typical Chinese family. We don't talk freely to our father. See? Anything we wanted, we went through our mother. See? Even 10 ringgits to pay for art class in school. I had to tell my mother had to tell my father, then get the 10 ringgits for me. Yeah. So when converted, I made up my mind that I would not raise up my children that way. Yeah. And that's why I read up books, Christian books, how to raise up children in a biblical way. Then I asked questions of godly families in the church. Yeah. So learn whatever good from them and reject whatever bad that they have experienced. So in the Christian life, we want to constantly be more biblical. And here, in the case of Jacob, he did not learn to reject what was not good in his parents. So he showed favoritism to Joseph. Okay? And you see this in chapter 37. In chapter 37,
Verse 3, and Israel loved Joseph more than all his children because he was the son of his old age. Also, he made him a tunic of many colors. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably to him. So Jacob, without intending it to be like that, brought misery upon Joseph. Joseph wouldn't want to be treated badly by his own brothers. Imagine the young boy would constantly want to follow the older brothers wherever they went, learn from them and stick close to their older brothers. But the older brothers were always scolding him, and they would go aside together and leave him behind. And you know, he lived a miserable life. They picked on him, see, because he was the favorite of the father. Yeah? And we learn that Reuben has shown himself to be a weak character. He gave in to his lust and even dared to sleep with his father's concubine. Terrible man, Reuben, see? He had no self-control totally. Yeah. So however sexually strong you may be, you have to learn to control. You don't go and defile your father's bed. You know, it's unthinkable. Certain things you don't even dare to think about. And here was this weak man who succumbed to his fleshly weakness. Yeah. And so what happened is, when Joseph was going to be sold away, at that time, Reuben made a feeble effort to try and save Joseph. They know that the brothers really wanted to kill Joseph. So he said to put him in a pit. See? And then when Reuben was perhaps taking care of the sheep a little distance away, when Reuben, the firstborn, was not around, see, the others quietly sold him off to some Ishmaelite merchants, some Arab merchants who were passing that way, going to Egypt. So he was sold off as a slave. See? And we know the subsequent story. God was with Joseph. Okay? And God blessed Joseph, protecting him from harm and giving him favor in the sight of all his masters, from one master to another. Remember Potiphar, the wife, tried to frame him? You see, you think that only men go after women, but women go after men as well, you see. They may appear to be so coy and so feminine, but actually in their hearts, you know, they are eyeing men as well, see? And Potiphar's wife wanted to sleep with Joseph, because Joseph was a good-looking young man, see? But as Joseph tried to escape, his coat was left behind, and Potiphar's wife turned it around and said, look, the person who owns this coat, he tried to violate me, see? And of course, Potiphar couldn't reconcile this. Joseph, all the world, has behaved so correctly. He seemed to be a God-fearing man. He feared his God. How could he do this? And yet, there's evidence here. What appeared to be evidence, only the interpretation was not right. And this is where, when you go into the theory of education, you know that facts may be there, but how do you interpret the facts? There's such a thing as correlation and causes. So a correlation may be different from the cause. You see something that appears like this, there's a correlation. But is this the cause of the problem? In education theory, you learn to distinguish between all these. And here is what appeared to be proof. The coat worn by Joseph is here, and his wife is saying that this man came in to violate her. You see? So it appeared to be proof. Actually, it's only a correlation. It's not the cause of the problem. So the cause lies in his own wife. See? And so what happened is that, what could he do with this as public evidence? So he had to put Joseph in jail. Good thing that he didn't order for Joseph to be put to death. He was a high officer, and that was the really serious crime. Yeah. So in prison, God was with Joseph, and God gave him unusual wisdom. Yeah? To interpret the dreams of those two men. And finally he was restored to a position of honor, and soon he rose to become the prime minister of Egypt. And as it turned out, Joseph was going to be used by God to preserve many lives. Okay? Then in the process, before Joseph revealed who he really was, that he was now the prime minister of Egypt, remember that there was famine throughout that region, and they really had run out of food, and it is really a matter of life and death. So the brothers went down to Egypt to buy food,
And then along the way, got entangled into this interplay of relationship between Joseph and his brothers. And what happened is that they were sent home, leaving Simeon, that tough brother of theirs, Joseph says, let him stay behind, be the hostage. You go and bring your youngest brother, Benjamin. And the brothers were so shocked, they came to buy grain, and it ended up in such big trouble for them. They went back and asked the father, we have to bring Benjamin back. The father, of course, refused to release, to allow Benjamin to go. He has already lost his favorite son, Joseph. And now Joseph's own brother from the same mother, from Rachel, the youngest and born by his favorite wife, Rachel. He's going to lose him as well. The poor father, he refused. No, don't allow him to go. It's not allowed. But the famine got worse and worse. And Reuben, we have seen that he's an unstable man, born as the first son, but unstable, unreliable. So he didn't succeed in persuading the father. Now Judah came to the fore. Judah was destined to be the tribe from which the Lord Jesus Christ came. So here Judah came forward and said, we have to go. If you have allowed to go, us to go the first time, we would have been back already. Now we're suffering. You want to wait until people die? Let my sons be the surety. If we bring Benjamin down, and if he doesn't come back with us, let them die. I'm prepared to guarantee that. So the father saw the dire situation, reluctantly allowed Benjamin to go, and the poor old man, grieving over the loss of Joseph, thinking that he was dead, eaten by animals many years ago. Now he has to part with Benjamin. And so what happened is that Joseph was used by God to really deal with the brothers. And finally, what happened is that Joseph revealed that God has actually preserved him to save many lives. And you see that in chapter 45, verse 7. So chapter 45. He revealed himself that actually you intend harm to me, but God turned things around so that I can be used by him to save many lives. But remember, our focus is upon Jacob and how he suffered because of his faith. He wanted to walk with God, and he faced with so much suffering. Now Jacob, the lesson to learn here is Jacob was used by God. He's like that pandan leaf, that is crushed. Now you see a fresh plant pandan leaves. I don't know whether this is due to old age. Everywhere I travel, I look at a tree. I see the beauty of the trees, A tree has beauty of its own. A tree can be of different shape. Some trees, their branches go sideways like that. Quite nice. So generally, I classify in my mind trees. We plant trees for three reasons, three basic reasons. To use the parts of the tree, the fruit or the trunk or whatever, or for decoration, landscaping, or for to get shade. So you plant a tree for these three basic reasons. If you want shade, plant a tree beside your house, then your house will be cool. There's no better way of cooling your house than having a tree. Have trees nearby. Really, seriously, you think about it. No artificial system can beat trees. Of course, you have to plant the right type of trees that give shade, and then you have to bear up with the leaves dropping, because it's part of the cycle that God intends. And then you look at the pandan plant, he has his beauty. You draw near, fragrant. And you look there, the ridges cause them to be sharp and rising like that, instead of limbed. You look at the spider lily, the leaves go sideways because there's no ridges holding it up. And the pandan leaves, amazing, And when you pull it, if our heart aches a little, you have to pull this leaf out. But wait a moment, this has no feelings. God created plants for us to use, and even animals, they created for us to use. We can kill them and have food. Don't have all these sentimental feelings for the animals, no. So you must have the right attitude towards all this. Then when you pull the pandan leaves, look, it is only when crushed, it is no more the nice leaf that it was earlier. But it's when it is crushed and look ugly, that the fragrance come out. Wow. And here was Jacob. I thought he was limping when he first came to know the Lord. See, he walked into a new day. He wanted to walk with God and be used by Him. And here trial after trial came to him. He was being crushed. But the fragrance of faith in his God came out. So it is like John chapter 12, verse 24. The Lord said, a grain of wheat must fall to the ground and die. Yeah? If it does not die, you will remain alone. But when it falls to the ground and die, you will produce much grain. To be used by God, we have to be like Jacob. Be ready to be crushed by the Lord. We don't like suffering. We don't like trials. But God brings trials and suffering into our lives. We must continue to exercise faith and act right. It's difficult, but we want to act right. That's why the man of faith faces trials and difficulties in a different way compared to the unconverted person. We are always wanting to seek to glorify God, to do what is most right in His eyes, to honor Him, to glorify His name. So the lesson is that we must die to self in order that God may use us mightily. Yes, when you see a person used by God, you must understand that he has suffered much. See, he will bear suffering. God crushes him in order that his fragrance may be seen everywhere. So, in fact, we have covered the trials before conversion, trials after meeting the Lord. Wow, it's sufficient, but let's end with the final blessings. When Joseph was sold away, he was 17 years old. 17 years old only? Yes, but it was sufficient time to stay close to his father and to catch a little of his father's spirituality. Favoritism notwithstanding. We know Jacob showed favoritism to Joseph. That was not right. See? But Joseph seems to be a spiritual-minded man. He had a close walk with God. When he was thrown into prison, he had that wisdom from above to interpret dreams. And remember, in the Old Testament, God revealed himself by dreams and visions still at that time. And to have the right interpretation from God, that shows that he was a person of unusual wisdom, and that wisdom must have come from heaven. And God was definitely with him and blessing him in all his relationships with others and with whatever his hand touched. See, where did he pick that up from? See, we say it has to be from his father. He was his father's favorite. So his father must have told him stories, and he must have listened carefully, leaving out the things that the father had done wrong, learning the things that the father had done right, see, and learning about faith, about trusting the Lord. You say, but he was 17 when he was sold away. But 17 is enough time to pick up important things concerning the life of faith. And when we raise up our children, is that not the length of time roughly that we have with them? Because by age 18 or so, they are. If there's national service, they have to go to national service. If they are going to college or university, they leave us around about that time. So at the latest, they leave you will be 20, 21. See? Of course, if possible, we don't want to leave allow our children to leave home too early. Don't send them to boarding school when they are 12 years old. If we are foolish, but it's for their future, you claim. We have the means, we have the money, we can pay for them, and they will have good education. But I say, you gain on the material side, but you lose on the emotional side and the spiritual side. Keep your children close to you in the home for as long as you can. See? And make sure that you have family worship, make sure you pray together, make sure you bring them to church, and from young, start them on Sunday school, and be regular in church, and along the way, you talk spiritual things. The children picked up a lot in that period of time. And look at those who have children who have grown up. They live us around about 18, 19, like that. They live home already. If they have not picked up the important things of the faith, it's too late. It's too late. They have to pick up these things from elsewhere. Now, how we wish our children were another 10 years with us. Then, by that time, they have come to faith, and they are more ready to appreciate the deeper things of God. They hear more preaching, and then they begin to be built up by the teaching of the church. How we wish they are here 5 to 10 years more. But fact is, they were unable to. Circumstances of their life means that by around about age 20, they have to leave home. See, we thank God that we started from the time they were babies. We train them. We provide them instructions in the Bible and give them spiritual values, why we do things in a certain way and the principles involved. We're thankful to God that we did not waste time, that we imparted to them as best we could what was right. You see? And of course, on hindsight, we always think that we could have done better. Really, we always think we could have done better. But thank God that we did not waste time while they were with us. We were imparting spiritual values to them. And I believe that Joseph had sufficient time with the father to absorb important spiritual things. That's why he was what he was when parted from the father. And of course, God used him to, as it were, discipline his own brothers. Jacob failed to discipline his brothers. Remember, he had struggling years and finally came to faith, and he had to travel back and face with Laban, settle down and face with the problem of Dinah, and there's so many deaths in the family, Rachel and then Isaac. So he seemed to have neglected the training of his children to the extent that this Reuben, you know, dared to defile his own father's bed. Then the quarrel in the family, and then he himself showed favoritism. He was not very good at handling children. But God used Joseph to discipline his brothers. And Joseph did not reveal his true identity, and along the way blessed them, sent them back with plenty of grain, and along the way tricked them and make them, you know, put the silver cup in their bags of grain, and then they have to come back and return to him, and then later they make Simeon be the hostage for them to bring Benjamin. And Joseph overheard them arguing with one another, and from their argument Joseph knew that they were already repentant. See, they repented of what they did. Wow. And so what happened is that Joseph finally broke down and revealed himself. I'm actually Joseph. They were all staggered. What is he talking? He's the prince. He is the prime minister of the big country, important country of Egypt. See? And so what happened is that he revealed himself and said that you intend ill on me, but God turned that around to become good, to save many lives. Okay? And what happened is that Joseph, because of his sufferings, and he continued to be faithful to God, God was with him, so he got the double portion of the blessing from Jacob. Our focus is on Jacob, you must remember. So he's the recipient of the covenant blessing. So now he wanted to pass the blessing down. So as far as the family was concerned, Reuben has lost his place as the firstborn. So Joseph virtually took over Reuben's place. See? And because Joseph has suffered much, he was the son of the father's heart, and the fathers must have been heartbroken to think that Joseph was killed by animals, and yet he found him alive and God had been with him. See, what sort of emotion must have come to him? So as they moved down to settle in Egypt, the time came for him to bless the children. So he treated Joseph as the firstborn, and his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, were regarded as receiving two portions. So the two sons of Joseph became like one tribe, but each like a tribe in the nation of Israel. And in later days, in the book of Revelation, when the 12 tribes are mentioned, then one tribe, then, is not mentioned. Instead, Joseph, his two sons, become two tribes. So that 12 tribes remain. Okay, there remain 12 tribes, even though then is no more mentioned. Then, according to the book of Judges, they move up north, away from all their brethren, and along the way they lose significance. They became absorbed under one of the tribes there. We don't know Asher or Zebulun, but in Revelation chapter when the 12 tribes are mentioned, you discover that then it's not mentioned in the chapter 7, verse 5 onwards. Instead, Manasseh and Ephraim are mentioned. So that way there are still 12 tribes to symbolically represent all God's people. Yeah. So finally, what happened is this. Jacob
Joseph was blessed, and Joseph was used as a type of Christ in that he preserved life. So when Jesus Christ died on the cross, people thought that the wicked people have won. But actually, Jesus Christ laid down his life, take it up again. God intended this to happen so that by his death, he redeemed his people from sin. And by his resurrection, he gives eternal life to his people. So what turned out to be the wicked deeds of man, God allowed that to happen. And they were held responsible for their wickedness. They will be judged accordingly. But in God's sovereignty, he turned the situation around to fulfill his purpose of saving for himself his people. So Joseph became, as it were, a type of Jesus Christ. But we are talking about Jacob. He has to pass on the covenant blessing not to Joseph. We are talking about Joseph being treated as the firstborn, inheriting a double portion of his physical inheritance. But we are talking about the spiritual promises of the covenant. It was to go to the 12 tribes. Okay? And Jacob himself soon died in peace. He knew that Joseph was in charge. He will take care of his other children. So at the ripe old age of 147 years old, in chapter 47, verse 28, you look at verse 9 and verse 28, you compare, you know that he died at age 147 years old. He was full of trials. He has come to face trials, but he has faced triumphs as well. God had been with him. Okay? God really had been with him. Remember when he was first brought to Egypt, he was brought before Pharaoh in chapter 47, verse 9 to verse 10. Yeah? The way he answered Pharaoh as an older man, a much older man, chapter 47. Yeah? He referred to his own God, chapter 47, verse 9 to verse 10. Jacob said to Pharaoh, the days of the years of my pilgrimage. So you see, he looked upon his life as a pilgrimage. His home was not in this earth. The days of my pilgrimage are 130 years at that time. He died a few years later in Egypt. Few and evil have been the days of the years of my life, and they have not attained to the days of the years of the life of my fathers in the days of their pilgrimage. So Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out from before Pharaoh. See, this old man, he paid sufficient reverence to the king of this big country. But he was more a child of God than the child of this world. He blessed Pharaoh. See? So the lesson to learn is that full assurance at death is expected for faithful children of God. We can have that full assurance. We don't have to be held back by the worries of this world. When the time comes, let go. Let go. Let go. Be ready to be called home by the Lord. Okay? So we draw to a close. Ask yourself, in your days of faith, have you faced trials and sorrow of one kind or another? You may say, but I just came to faith not long ago, so I don't know what really are the trials and sorrow that will come to me. You don't have to wait too long. When your faith is tested, when the principles you hold on to will result in misunderstanding and people might ostracize you in a family, your own family will be against you. See? You will be hated by your friends and colleagues for your stand for the truth. And you will be in good company because those who are on a spiritual pilgrimage like Jacob, like Isaac, like Abraham, they knew that this is part and parcel of the faith. So what is the lesson? The lesson is Romans 8:18. And let me read out to you Romans 8:18 as the closing lesson. The Apostle Paul says, "For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us." And may God help us to be faithful to the end.